and rushed.
Oh, for Miss Hayden. Annette Walker. She was Annette Walker. I always liked the name Annette.
Yeah, we've had a lot of wonderful old families and fine people down in and around McIntosh and Marion County, but I can't think of the changing. So many people who are moving in there now, they may be just as fine, but you can't get acquainted with them.
Is that right?
No, they all work until Kyle or Gainesville. They're just never there.
Oh, I see.
You see,
but
in
the
that
whole
way?
Thing changes.
Uh-huh. I mean, so many of our newcomers, our old ones are dying and they're moving away, and new ones are moving in, and that's what it is. They have to work somewhere now. You could be used to farm, or they have stores, they had groves down there. But now then, people go back up here to the medical center to work, and to the Veterans Hospital to work, and so they're just in McIntosh at night, and on weekends those women have to look after their houses and their children, and mm-hmm. on Sundays they're either Catholics or they go to some other church, and so we just don't know them.
I don't like to think about it.
It's even hard to get acquainted with them, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, who is that that has the, what do you call it, the wallboard? Wall?
Drywall.
Drywall.
Uh-huh. Eddie Collins.
Yeah.
Eddie Collins works for the drywall people.
Yeah.
And the drywall man is Mr. Bryant. And he built that big pretty house in McIntosh up near the water tank,
mm-hmm.
right in the middle
yeah.
of it. That's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Mr. Bryant.
And that drywall money.
Mm-hmm. The drywall people. And he had an $8,000 contract. We thought that was a big contract. He had an $8,000 contract to do the walls in the new Grant store when they opened up in the shopping center in Ocala. Now then, they say he has $1 million contract south of Ocala at one of those big developments. And Eddie Collins thought at the time that he just moved down there. And we hated to leave them because we do know the socialized with the Collins. But I have since heard that they've decided that they will not move. But we didn't think that Browns would surely move because they have a $50,000 place there in McIntosh. That's it. That new place they built. I guess it's a more expensive place even than the walk-ups.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Well.
But those two families are Methodists, and they really go to church, and they come to our civic league, but there are so many newcomers that don't go to the things around there. Well. We just don't know them at all.
Oh, that's right. They don't even go, do they, to things? Not even to the civic things.
I went to see one woman. She bought this Cecil McRae place up there beyond that water tank. And she works at the university. Says she'd been there quite a long while. And when I asked about the Civic League, well, she said, of course, she would. But she says, I stand in pretty well up there, and I can get an afternoon off. Well, I said, we don't have four meetings a year, and one of those is at night. And she said she thought she could get off she could ask off some admin. Well, I said, I wish you would, so you get to know our people and we'll get to know you. And they are a branch of the Mormon church, and so they don't go to that church. They have church on their front porch on Sunday, and people come from Dunnell and all around about. Those few who do belong to whatever faith this is, it's not the Mormons, but it's a branch of it. And they've been wanting to rent the community house to have the service, and the town won't rent it to them. Every Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they said, rent the place up there where Daniels used to have a store. You know, there used to be a barber shop there. They said, rent that. Fix it up. Well, I think they're right not to let this community house be used every Sunday for that. But they haven't done that. But they say they do meet. They come up there from all around about who belong to this faith. and have services there. Their name is Hetherington. They're nice people. Pleasant when you meet them. I go see them because I write for the paper. I go see all the newcomers.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And they look like they're scared there. I mean, and I said, I'm not with the circulation department. I just write the news. They think I'm going to try to sell them a subscription or something, you know.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'm not with the circulation department. Be glad you take the paper, but I'm not with that department. I just want to know who you are and welcome you to that town. And I invite you, while I'm here, invite you to our church. I belong to the Baptist church on the highway. We're glad to have you come if that's the church of your choice. If not, there are other churches in town. Be equally glad to have you worship with them. And then I tell them where I live, and I invite them to come down and see me, and I just never see them.
Mm-hmm.
Just never see them.
But Bryant family and Collins family.
That's right.
Do
uh-huh,
take part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But they're not what you call newcomers, what you call. They've been around there for a good while. And Miss Collins has passed examinations for the post office work, so she is part-time down at the post office. And she has two other cute little children.
Mm-hmm.
They both get music from them. And they go to the Methodist Sunday School.
Well, they don't need the. She doesn't need the money. They make plenty of money.
Mm-hmm. They went to the wedding.
Oh, the Collins.
The Collins went to the wedding. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a good time. But you better let me help you wash the dishes.
No, you let me have a dishwasher.
Do you wash the dishes?
Well, now tell me some of the other newcomers, Lois.
Well, we have a family across the park on the south side from me in a big two-story house. They've recently moved there. Their name is Carow. K-A-R-O-W, Carow. And when I went over to see them, she said, but just like coming back home, said, we have been Marion County residents. We have lived in Ocala. And they moved here, though, from Gainesville. And we're glad to get back in Marion County. Feel like we're getting back home. And so when I told her who I was, she said, are you kin to J.K. Dixon in Ocala? I said, no, but I had a hard time convincing who I was, and she just made sure I was kin to J.K. Dixon. I said, no, I know Mr. Dixon. But I said, but I can. She has a daughter named Elizabeth. She said, I know I went to school with Elizabeth. I'm in Tallahassee. I said, she met a Donaldson. Yes, yeah, she knew that. Well, we concurred on that, all right. And so they are Episcopalians. They are Episcopalians. But now she and the daughter, they have a daughter with them. They have another daughter who's married, is not lives here. And this daughter goes to Santa Fe College. She's that age. And Mrs. Carow works at one of the hospitals. I don't know whether it's Veterans or whether it's the Medical Center. And Mr. Carow doesn't, I don't think he's too well. I think he's had some kind of heart condition. But he's he sells insurance on occasion. And so, but Mrs. Carow and the daughter came over to see me the other night. They returned my call, and I was glad of that. And they cleaned up their old place. That old place, the people who had it had about six children. And they tried to keep it pretty well. But you know, children have bicycles, they have all kinds of toys and bottles and things around about toys. So it had gotten to where it looked a little neglected. But they've straightened it all up and looks better. And it's very nice inside. Oh, but she said, who in the world, she said, put those funny columns on the front porch of the house that we bought. It said, it doesn't belong that way. But has it always been that way? I said, I don't remember. I don't much think so. She said, I know they must have had dinosaurs like yours. Because it belongs to that style. And she won't know. People ask me, they seem to think I know everything. They ask me where I thought she could get some of those dinosaurs. But that's what they want to do. She said, in time, we want to restore the appearance of the front of the house by taking down those columns they have there, but that doesn't belong to that period, don't they? These are the people who live across from the community house on the uh-huh. south uh-huh. in a big two-story house. Uh-huh. Their name is Corot.
Oh, there's so many of those big old houses down there.
What?
So many of the big old houses
oh, yeah,
down
uh-huh.
in McIntosh.
And John Walkup, the attorney, bought the Wynn place. Bought for $22,500.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a big house.
It's got about six bedrooms.
I'm sure.
There's about four upstairs and two down. Now, one downstairs is quite small. But the house was originally a bungalow.
Yeah.
When William Christian built it. And then later, why
did he build it?
Yeah, William Christian built it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took the top off of it and built it up. And then later, they made another big improvement.
Oh.
And then when they moved to Ocala and Bill Wynn, his son-in-law, bought it, they made a few little adjustments too. So it really is very nice. Now then John Walker has bought. And John intended to build on some property he had out in the country, but he didn't find the side building material going up like it is, and John's family increasing like it is. Why he could get that size house for $22,500, he'd better take it.
Yeah.
And she's got it fixed up. They're not completely furnished yet, of course, but she has my knife.
Yeah,
takes my knife.
That'd take a lot of furniture, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Lois, who lives right next to that dress shop where the old drugstore used to be? Or is there a dress shop there now?
There's a dress shop downstairs. Now, upstairs is an apartment.
Where is it?
People live up there.
Well, who lives in the house next door to her?
Well, nobody lives there now. That's Miss Turnipseed's home.
Yeah.
Turnipseed.
Yeah.
She hadn't been there for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, hasn't she?
She's up in Kentucky. She went up there because she was from Kentucky. She used to go up there every summer. And she closed the house and went up there one summer. About 3 summers ago, I guess, and her sister was not well, so she thought she'd just go and stay with the sister for a while, and the sister died. And while she was there, her brother died, and then she got sick. You just never heard of one bad luck happening to her, and then another. And so she hadn't come back all that time. Meantime, the house had been broken into 2 or 3 times.
Oh.
I remember I pulled up too close to her fence there one time.
Mm-hmm.
And she came out and spoke to me.
Oh, did she speak to you?
Yeah.
little woman.
Little woman.
Thin. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I thought then, well, I ought to be a little better acquainted with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I never got back.
Mm-hmm. But she's frail.
Yeah, she was frail then.
And Alvin Hendricks wanted to buy it at one time, and she wouldn't sell it.
Yeah.
But might have been so much better for her if she had sold it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now that it leaks, and it's just in bad shape.
That's too bad.
And the highway just right up on the front doorstep.
Yeah.
But somebody could take and tear that house down and build a nice house, let it face south instead of facing on the
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
And make a nice place out of it. But I don't know. Take a lot of money to do that. The
you
other
have
lot,
the choice place in town.
Uh-huh. Well, I have the picket fence. I have the best identification card in town.
Well, you do, really. You do, mm-hmm. aren't you? You have a... and nothing really is close to you.
Mm. No, I've had... I've chanced every now and then to sell one of those lots. But I said I couldn't get much for the lot. have to give half of it to my sister. My sister and I own that's both of, it belongs to both of them. And if I was to sell something, well, I'd give her half of it. And we could spend that before you could catch your breath, and then you wouldn't have the lot of all the money either.
Yeah.
And as neither one of us need the money right now, we would take it and draw it and spend it, but we don't need it. So I thought, well, I'm just not going to do it. No, sir. And especially now when you know might know somebody might buy it from either them, myself, to a color person or something, and myself, some people I didn't care to have
you,
neighbors.
You just need all that.
Yeah. So it's not for sale as far as I.
You know, Lord, it doesn't seem as far back as you said when the people had a family living on the premises, on the place. But I guess it has been longer back than I thought. You said yours were the last ones.
And I don't know how much longer that will last for sanitation purposes. I think I would pretty soon have had to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have done it.
I don't know. It seemed like it seemed like such a good idea, though, to have some family living on the place. You've always got someone to watch out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the health is a member, you know, someone to sort of do odd jobs for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
White or black or any color, doesn't matter.
Is it that house hadn't burned down? When Charlie had just died, the house been vacant. I think I would have moved that house a little nearer my house for a garage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's made out of the same lumber my house was.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get to do that.
And that's so much better than having somebody under the same roof.
Yeah, uh-huh.
With you.
Mm-hmm.
When you live by yourself, do you get spoiled, and then when you have a lot of people under the roof with you, you have to put up with a lot of noise?
Mm-hmm.
You don't notice that?
No. I live alone and like it.
Yeah.
you ever read that book? There's a book written, Live Alone and Like It.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I do. I live alone and like it.
Yeah.
Well, I do, you know, just the two of us in this big old house.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of people come in here, and
it takes a while to get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
It does take a while
mm-hmm.
to get used to it.
Yeah.
We like it,
mm-hmm.
but then it's nice too. I can see how you can live alone and like it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good. It's good to have a big family. You know. There's many things going on in the world, you see. Just one person doesn't have a chance to keep up. Now, if you've got somebody, you see, who's a lawyer or a plumber, or you see, they watch out for all those things, and they can talk about them and tell you about those things. But you just, one person, you see, just can't stretch that far.
Yeah, I never have lived with a crowd.
But you've never lived by yourself very long.
No. Mm-mm.
Because you had your uncles and...
But you never lived with a crowd.
No, but see, there was but the two children. And by the time, but I'm so much older, by the time Lucia was ready to begin to go to school there in McIntosh, I was ready to go away to school. Because our school was kind of sour there at that time. My health wasn't very good, and I went to Georgia to school. And then by the time I was through school and was back home to stay, around there. But that time she was ready to go off to school, so my sister and I didn't grow up together much.
Uh-huh.
Because we're different in our ages. And but the time she was ready to go off to school and I was back home, but I reached the age where I like to have her to do things for, you know. I knew what I used to like when I was that age. And so I took so much interest and pleasure in helping my brother get things to send to her to school about her clothes and about things for a room and everything. So I've enjoyed it so much like that.
Yeah.
And then after a while, there was a time when It didn't seem that different. But I'm getting to feel the generation gap now. she wants to run even more than I do and go. I just soon go up there where we're going now. We've been all the places, so I just soon go stay at her house while she has her vacation.
Yeah.
But on her vacation, she wants to go.
Yeah.
And she comes down here and she does much want to stay around Magnus all the time. Yeah, she wants me to take her around.
Well, now I thought it was the other way around.
Oh, no, it isn't all together. It isn't all together, me now. Could have been me at one time. It is all together me now, but she still likes to go, and I worry about Lucille sometimes. Sometimes I feel that she doesn't have something inside to cling to like I do. I can't express it, but she's always reaching out for something, things or something.
Mm-hmm. Such as.
Well, I don't know, a concert, or a baseball game, or a show, or something, some big social affair, a big dinner. If it's planned, her, she lives to it.
Uh-huh.
And then it seems like she hasn't got anything as much to fall back on as I have. I don't know what I'm.
You don't need to do something all the time.
No. Mm-mm. I don't have to turn on my radio all the time to be seeing something, hearing something. I roam around. I get interested in looking up something and doing some kind of research. It does me good at the time. If I something I can't remember, then I have to go and look up for it. Then I'm finding that, I find something else, and one thing just leads to another. Just complete the fills my evening or fills my day.
Well, now, at one time you were interested in Edward Bach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something like that will stay in your mind a long time, mm-hmm. just sort of grow on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, what are you interested in now? I'm not interested in anything at all like that. It seemed like I quit growing a good while ago.
Well, I don't know. I'm not right now. I haven't had much of anything like that just now either. But if I could stay at home now, there's some I might. But now I've got to get ready to go off. I want to leave my place just right. I have a lot of things I want to do around there, and I haven't got my clothes fixed just like I want. So between now and the 24th, I'll be busy doing things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, who are these people? Who are these people, don't you know, who the integration people? They're the ones, don't you know, these colored men who write those books. Mm-hmm. The black, I forget. I don't read any of them. See, I'm out of touch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. That's what, a lot of young people read those things. They're pretty strong. They're incendiary, you know. Mm-hmm. There's nothing quiet about any of them. But I don't know them.
Hattie and I ate lunch yesterday at Jerry's, and there's a table for five over there near us, and they all had they were games of police, and the youngest looking people you ever saw, young looking. They must have been just reading the meters, maybe. But they had on their sleeves Gainesville City Police, and this young girl here, black girl, there's a black girl there, another young girl here, and two boys. And they've just all having the best time.
Yeah.
But that girl, the white girl sitting here with the white hair way down here, she looked like she could have been more than 17, 18 years old, and yet on her shirt sleeve was this game of police. The white girl, the black girl, another white girl, and two white boys. Everybody has to kind of get used to that. You know, we're not used to it.
In that little, I'm in an office there, over there across the street from where I was. And there's a little parking lot in the backyard. There was a backyard, and mm-hmm. it's a parking lot now. And everybody parks in it besides the people who have the sticker. And the police was back there one morning, and I went back. I just saw him, and I thought I'd go talk to him a minute. It's rather warm, and you know they wear, seems to me, Oh, everybody wears heavy uniforms mm-hmm. now, and the police, and these state patrolmen, people like that, well, they wear heavy clothes. Some man was a. But anyhow, he had on that hard cap. He had it pushed back, and he was trying to write on a pad and put a sticker for that car, and he couldn't see. His eyes were fogging up, and the perspiration was falling down on the pad. And I said to him, "Are you a little short-handed?" And I didn't know what he said just to that. I said, "How many helping you?" He says, "I'm the only one." Now, he had to be the university police, because the Gainesville mm-hmm. police don't come out on the campus. Now, for that whole campus with thousands of cars, I don't think they had over three or four mm-hmm. boys, and he was young, looked like he couldn't have been over 25.
Mm-hmm.
So,
could be they've got some auxiliary policemen.
Well, they ought to have. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Seems like I read it somewhere. Mm-hmm.
They ought to deputize me. I would.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'd keep that place clear.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to get used to it. I tell you, you know, we had our children here, Lois, and mm-hmm. we had some company here and there, and we got to where we just don't like to sit down without having somebody sit down with us.
Yeah, well.
And we sure appreciate you coming in.
Well, now, I just appreciate you asking me.
Because
we just
spoil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we ought to let her eat her supper for you and not talk uh-huh. to her dad.
Uh-huh.
I tell you, we'll let you eat your supper next time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But I enjoyed that.
But I guess when people live alone, by that they do get kind of hungry to talk sometimes.
No, we put you up to it because we were so interested, and I just mm-hmm. did, and I thought John could be with us. I just hadn't met anybody that I liked that.
Well, I'm glad because he's been secretly been a little family problem about John.
Well, I don't
because
know.
He has, and people ask us, and we get so embarrassed. See, and they ask me, "What do you do? What line of work are you in?"
Yeah.
He said, "I do art."
Well, that's fine. There ought to be a lot of people in the world mm-hmm. who can just mm-hmm. do nothing.
Sure.
He's had a real job taking care of his mother and father. That's a real thing.
Well, it has been now. That's the way. Back in those days, nowadays you just put his father somewhere.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it then, so as you know, you can see you.
Sure.
It was private.
Sure.
And so that's what he's done.
Mm-hmm. And he's still young.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much income he has, but if he has enough, like. Alvin Hendricks, he has enough to satisfy him. Alvin Hendricks says, "I'm going to tell." Next time people say anything to me, I'm going to say, "Well, Alvin Hendricks doesn't work either." So, but not for, maybe he doesn't need income, but I wish it would be more normal. And he's never had a date with a girl. He's never run out like that socially.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
I just never been interested in girls.
Well, you know what?
But he's come to a turning point in his life now. If things won't be exactly like they have been.
That's right.
You say not?
Well, no. I mean, he doesn't have that responsibility now. And I don't know if he would go to the training union or those things at church where he'd be with the younger. Because John's not young, I reckon he's in his 40s.
Well, he sure doesn't look like it.
Uh-uh.
Well, I think he would be.
Is he a church worker?
Well, he goes to church. He goes Sunday. I don't know. He goes to church every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he goes to the night services. You know, they do a lot for young people socially in churches.
But he doesn't, he's not a worker.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he makes a lot of posters for them now. They told me the artwork he does is for the church, but he's not paid to do it. He just donates, he makes beautiful posters and charts and things for the church. But he just gives it to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, the church would lose out if he started looking for a job.
Well, no, he would have time to do both, so that's not a... But he's slow.
Oh, he is slow?
He's slow. Mm-hmm.
Takes him a while to cook breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because he's meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
But he has that wit.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
You fast?
Hmm?
You fast?
Yeah, I'm kind of fast.
You give it a lick and a promise?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And his mother was slow. Usually we go out there from Georgia before they moved to South Carolina, and we'd go out there to see him. Ora had one child. Belle had three, her sister. And we'd get ready. She'd had this girl daughter, Mary Belle. She had two sons. She lost the two boys.
Oh.
And we want to go somewhere. And Bella had the house all cleaned up, the breakfast all cleaned up, and the lunch ready we were going to take with us, and our children all ready. And we'd had to wait for Orr and John. They'd had nothing else to do all morning but get ready. That's slow. And so was my brother-in-law slow. My sister was fast. And Si was never on time anyway.
Oh.
And it got on Lucille's nerves, because my father was a minute man. We brought up that being on time. And she got away. They were invited to supper at 8 o'clock. She telling me invited for 7:30. She telling me everybody for 7:30. And finally he caught up with her and kind of hurt his feelings, but she made a joke out of it. She said, well, now, yeah, I just had to to get you there on time. I had to tell you that. And so some people are fast, some people are slow. And so Lucille had that with Si, and we've had that with Orr and John. But my father was a minute man. He never was late. And he said, if I can't be there to hear him sing the first song, I'll just soon not be there.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. And he was the director in the First National Bank in Gainesville.
Oh.
And he used to go up on the train. We used to have a morning train. He'd go up on the train, had a meeting at 10 o'clock. And he'd go up and get off that train. He'd go down to Mr. Chitty's.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Chitty was the director, too. And Mr. Baird, the director, he'd go off and he'd get with Chitty, and they'd go around and get Baird, and they'd go to that meeting. And they had that meeting at 10 o'clock, period. Not 5 minutes after 10, not 2 minutes after 10, it was 10 o'clock. And they attended the business and didn't take them all along, and my father called this noon train and came on back. And he said of all things he ever had anything to do with in his lifetime, he liked that National Bank. Because it was so prompt, they didn't waste any time, they attended business, and then they got through.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can't go to Alan Rosenberger, the vice president of that bank. You know Alan Rosenberger?
Mm-hmm.
You know Alan Rosenberger? Oh, Mick and Opie boy.
Oh.
Out there. Well, I thought you knew. You people not old timers either.
No.
Now, okay. Alan Rosenberger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went to Micanopy School. His mother taught school. Out that Wakahoodie,
mm-hmm.
out that neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
where the Hares live, out in there is where those Rosenbergers live.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth Rosenberger, Margaret Rosenberger, is the principal of the school in Gainesville.
That's the reason the name is familiar to me, because I remember the name.
Margaret Rosenberger.
Uh-huh.
She's a friend of an elementary school, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his brother. That's his sister, Alan, and Margaret Rosenberger.
So they're important people now.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think they are. Mm-hmm. Last time I saw Margaret Rosenberger was at the police station. I was ever over parking. She was ever running through a school zone. There are a lot of people there. We weren't the only ones. There were a lot.
I've been there in line.
A lot, lot of people there. And I looked by Margaret. Rosemary was tall. And I stood in line. I looked back and said, I said, what are you doing? What are you doing? He said, I ran through a school zone on my way to a school meeting.
Lois, I feel like I ought to give you some sweet milk or something.
Huh?
I never.
Well, when I get my pictures back, I'll show you a couple of pictures here.
Yeah.
I want to see some of John's pictures too.
Oh, yes, I want him to see those pictures that you have of Granny.
Oh, all right. I'll
yeah.
Be.
We won't see.
I have a thumbs up, you know, on the wall. I have yeah. Shot me a Granny
yeah.
Siri. And
well,
I imagine maybe you'll send me another one now that you've been down here. And
let's
you've
see.
Seen how I cherish them.
This is Saturday the 11th. Now you will be traveling
24th.
I'm going 24th. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have long around here.
No,
then,
I don't
you?
Have long around here. I won't be with you long. I won't be with you long.
Yeah.
But you won't be gone too long.
No, I think I'll come back either 11th or 12th.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a long time.
Well, that's a good while, Faye.
Middle of August.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I tell you, they want me up there on the 26th. For the first birthday of the little adopted baby. Now, he won't know whether I'm there or not, but the family won't be there. So I'm going on the 24th, so I'll be there on the 25th.
Yeah.
But then Lucia doesn't get her vacation. The 25th is on Saturday.
Yeah.
And her vacation doesn't begin until the next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be there a week.
Yeah.
See, and for our neighbors, the other thing.
That
week. And then at Friday, at 5:30, while we leave, and we drive, we'll probably go all the way to Old Ford that night and get in there by 10 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll be back on the 8th.
Mm-hmm.
Our vacation's over the 8th. And I thought I'd have to stay. I travel in the middle of the week because it's cheaper.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll wait till. I could start home on Monday afternoon. I can't start home on Monday morning.
Yeah,
but
Monday
I could start home Monday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And they have new schedules now. I haven't checked on all that. But I may come home Monday afternoon. If not, I'll come home Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, you've got a lot of things to do just to get ready then for
yeah.
all that. What are you going to do with your house?
Little what?
With your house. Just lock it up?
Oh, yeah, just like that.
And walk off and leave it.
And we won't scrape the fence this time.
No,
nobody,
you won't have to scrape the fence.
Nobody to oversee it?
Well, I have a little neighbor. I had to come over and water my flowers this time.
Yeah.
And I brought a little bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
I said to her while I left, I said, now you want me to pay you for the job of doing it? Or you want to me to pay you for the day? Or you want me to bring you a little present or what? Well, she said, she let me know. She went home, talked to her mother, and she came back and she said, so you bring me the present. So I brought her a bracelet.
You already brought it?
No, that was when I went away up to South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm going away again. So another little neighbor here, she came and said, who's going to water your flowers for you?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's good.
I'd like to water. Could I water your flowers for you?
She wants a bracelet.
She wants a bracelet. And Jim Camp keeps his eye on the place, and all the neighbors keep their eye on the place.
But Jim Camp's not there very much.
No, but he comes in late at night, and he can see their lights or everything looks all right over there.
Yeah.
No, I just go off.
Well, I'd like to keep your back porch.
Would you like to keep the back porch?
Yeah.
And you kept the fence on the last time. I came in there and I saw that. I thought, my.
I'd just like to have that back porch and go in there and sit on it every now and then.
But
I saw that
voted for your back porch. I saw that fence and I thought, my goodness alive. It must have been having rain or something. It washed all that fence off of it. It made a difference, though. And then I got walking around and I said,
such a little bit.
All this paint on.
All this mess on the ground.
I look like somebody has scraped this. So I went off to Jim Camp and he said, you've had your fence scraped.
Oh,
I said, have I? Have I had my fence scraped? Well, I said, you know Grandma? He said, no, no. I said, you don't know Grandma? No. Well, I said, I don't know who they can really be, unless it could be Grandma. And then I found out that it was a guy and one boy, and you and another boy.
Yeah.
But he didn't see it with just the one team.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick was out there for a while. Yeah.
Well, it was fun. I sure thank you for everything.
You know, we tried to get up a little team on that.
Yeah.
We were really fun to ride.
It's like these little boys over here that you got in touch with. I never could work up much enthusiasm.
After
scraping
three or four of those things, they wanted to have a soda pop.
Yeah.
They were looking for another job, weren't it?
Yeah,
not so active.
I thought I had let the Reba family, the Reba children, they were such good workers. When I got them down there, they didn't want to last long either. And I didn't want to last long either. Because one of those girls, I don't know how in the world she ever got all the paint off of her hand and arm. I said, honey, if I use that, I was going to ruin you. I never saw so much paint all over her hands and arm. She didn't know as much about painting as I thought she did. So.
When did you have that done last, Lois? Who did it last?
Well, everybody. The Reba started last.
Yeah.
And then they quit. And then I just sent out an SOS call to anybody, and I finally got three old men.
Yeah.
Mr. Broussard, and Frank Williams' father down there.
Yeah.
And the Mr. and Ms. Kyler worked there for a while.
Yeah.
They gave up on it.
Yeah.
And the three old men finished it.
Yeah.
And that's scraping.
Huh?
Scraping it.
And cleaning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then the last time anybody did it was a Mr. Houston Spain from Ocala. He painted part of it and he washed part of it.
Uh-huh.
It got pretty good effect of it looking clean again.
Yeah.
But I think that washing, what if you put in that wash it, was one thing that made it that paint scale. I never had paint scale before like that on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was right scaling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Now, the north side has held up fine, my paint. I got that Maricotta paint. I told you about it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the west side, there are more trees there and moss, and it's showing more mildew, but the paint starts scaling.
Well, good. Good.
I'm perfect. I'm happy.
You're good for a long time.
Yeah, I'm good for a long
This is the end of the visit with Lois, Saturday night, the 11th of July, 1970, Saturday night, 11th of July, 1970. For supper, we had that watermelon that the cookie brought us, and she reported on John, and this is Channel 2 over. Around 600, Channel 2 over, around 600, and the end of the little visit with Lois on Saturday night, the 11th of July, 1970. This round, Channel 2 over, around 605.
Well, you've been in a hard place before, so don't worry about it. You'll make it, and that builds my, what you want to call it, anything you want to call it up, and I feel better, but still I get nervous and disgusted. I would rather be working. I'm not particular. I mean, I've worked at different things. I've done plumbing work, carpenter work. I've built driveways. I've done all types of heavy equipment work. And I've been from superintendent down to a regular labor. And I'm not greedy when it comes to making a living. I'll do anything there is to do to get it.
Men with lesser skills are also coming home to wait out layoffs with their families. There's no work in the valley for men who put door latches on new cars, but they file for benefits anyway in their home counties. Then they disappear up dirt roads with colorful names to wait for better times. They're not really part of the tri-state area's workforce, but until things improve in Detroit or Cleveland or wherever, they are part of the tri-state unemployment problem. Steve Delaney, NBC News, reporting. Carl Self is 38 years old, the father of nine children.
A citizen. The parole system aims at keeping him out of jail. Today, men convicted of breaking the law themselves oversee that job. Charles Corot in Seattle has the story.
I'm not against the institution. I'm against the time.
Yeah,
hey,
well,
I mean, the time wouldn't be so bad.
I don't think
no guy
should do over 5 years.
If you
didn't
have me
there
2 years.
Oh, I don't
years,
think anybody should do more than 3-8 myself.
Well, I don't think people down there been locked up for better than 5 years. And boy, I'm telling truth, if my father let them out, I would not let them out.
They are sitting around rapping about the joint, talking about prison. They all know what they're talking about. Clifford Thurman served 9 years for robbery. Bob Williams served time in Canada for smuggling. Betty Phillips spent 18 months in federal prison at Terminal Island, California for possession of stolen mail. Dave Grant, 9 months for burglary. Larry Brooks' burglary career sent him to prison 3 times. They are ex-cons. Some of them are still on parole. They meet like this often at the Seattle Central District Parole Headquarters. That's because they work here. They are all parole officers. Their office, 200 Broadway on the edge of the ghetto, is the symbol of a whole new approach to probation and parole. The U.S. Labor Department's New Careers Program pays the bills. The state of Washington hires the parolees as parole officers. And the ex-cons, like Larry Brooks, who know a little something about what's wrong with the parole system, work their heads off trying to show it can be improved. Traditionally, the relationship of a parole officer to his client has been roughly that of a cop to a criminal. Larry Brooks approaches things a little differently.
How about the police? Police didn't bother you anymore?
No, not lately.
Not lately?
No.
Okay, that's good. Well, look, you know, next time, they start following you and stopping you and giving you tickets and things, you get a couple of badge numbers. And I take and put it down in the record, you know, and if they bust you for something, man, you know, it'll be, you know,
yeah.
you may be able to prove, you know, harassment on that end, you know. So you keep that in mind, you know. Well, incidentally, the city's got some training programs, too, in mechanics, automobiles. You call out to the city personnel department, ask for the minority recruiter down there.
Well, you'd be ready there.
Give us some slapjack. Give us some slap.
That's good.
Come on, thug. Give us some slap. You ain't gonna give me no slap? Huh? You ain't gonna give me no slap? Give us some slap,
son. Yeah.
And I'll, you know, drop by Monday evening and pick you up.
All right.
Catch you then. Okay.
Okay, I'll see you then.
All right, then.
I just want you to do my report, when you come in.
All right.
Support for Larry Brooks and the work he and the others are trying to do comes from some of the parolees he works with, like John Azell.
Like Larry, now I really feel bad if I went out and done something, you know, and then he'd have to come see me in the jailhouse. It doesn't make him feel like I'm not necessarily the one who went wrong. He's going wrong too, see, and I just don't want to, you know, make him feel this way or put him in that predicament. That's why one reason why I've been out this long. Because, you know, I done had somebody that understood, you know, and not chasing behind me and spying on me and so forth, you know. Not caring what I do just as long as I do what I'm supposed to, you know. So, it's just a lot better.
Why do you do it? You know, you don't get paid very much. You could make a lot more money in some other job.
I think, you know, me, myself, personally, I feel that it's sort of like my thing in changing the system that sort of held me down or hurt me in the past. And I can say I know of lots of fellows that, you know, it probably could have eventually hurt it, you know, unless there are some change. And I think fellows like me that are sort of let in the door, in a sense, can make these changes, can bring about these changes in some way.
Say, Slick, what's going on?
In Seattle, more than half of all parolees end up violating their parole and going back to prison. Larry Brooks is a part of that statistic. He did it once himself.
Say, man, did you go back on that railroad?
That's it, man.
Now, armed with a little honest pay and a lot of honest humanity, he cruises around streets he knows very well, seeing his clients. They say he cares about them more than any parole officer they ever heard of. They're right.
Oh, Leroy, he's one of the greatest baseball pitchers around here.
Charles Kuralt, CBS News, Seattle.
The calls with a bit of good news on the international front, the Republic of San Marino.
Put it in simple terms, will be student-designed education that will carry with it all the attendant benefits, namely credit units and ultimately degree.
What's going on at Berkeley is the beginning of something, the end of which is not in sight. Frank Burkholzer, NBC News, reporting.
Good night for NBC News.
Was closing off 11.5 points. Profit-taking was given as a major reason for the decline. Volume, 12,500,000 shares. The average price per share on the New York Exchange lost 56 cents, on the American Exchange, 25 cents. In a moment, a story related to that unemployment report.
Mrs. Roberts, it's opening night, your son's first place. How do you feel?
Wonderful. Proud. My son's a scribbler. He always...
Areas of competition for the B-1 contract. Air Force sources say North American's proposal was highest in cost and least desirable in design, and the firm was considered most likely to run into the kind of money trouble which has plagued Lockheed in its development of the C-5A transport. Those sources report that Boeing was the low bidder and was rated as having the best chance of completing the contract. General Dynamics had what the Air Force considered the best design. Since the contract nevertheless went to North American, it's assumed here that there was another consideration, one on which there was no formal competition. Both Boeing with its 747s and its SST and General Dynamics with its F-111s are currently in better economic shape than North American. What's more, North American is in Southern California, which already has lost 50,000 jobs because of defense cutbacks and stood to lose perhaps 100,000 more. Thus, economic and political reality apparently dictated the decision, which could lead to a production contract for up to 300 B-1s at a cost which, according to some Pentagon research experts, will be $60 million apiece, almost three times the original estimate. Stephen Rowan, CBS News, Washington. Another new plane in development, the supersonic transport, is having money troubles in Congress. In Seattle today, the builder showed a model of the SST, and a cabinet member urged its development. Terry Drinkwater reports.
This is the second unveiling of a mock-up of the SST at Boeing. The first was in 1966. Then the design involved a movable wing. Now the wing is fixed, thus a second mock-up and a second unveiling. But problems with the design aren't the only difficulties that Boeing is having with the airplane. Ecologists, economists, and the Congress are fundamentally challenging whether it should be built at all right now. In Washington, the House narrowly approved the Nixon request for funds to continue with development of the SST. The Senate has yet to act. And that is one of the reasons for this presentation today. For the administration, Transportation Secretary John Volpe was here.
There are those who reason that if we don't build an SST, there won't be any SSTs. Well, I've already seen the Concorde in flight. Concorde 1 is in production. Has already flown at more than 1,000 miles per hour. And Concorde 2, by the way, is already on the drawing boards. Still others have suggested that the SST will pollute our air and will be too noisy for our human ears. I can assure those concerned that by the time the SST flies commercially, these environmental problems will be solved. They're well on the way. Most of them are already solved.
If the plane is built for passengers, Boeing says it will be the ultimate, cruising at 1,800 miles an hour, New York to Paris in 2 hours and 40 minutes. But on the ground, there are major problems. For example, taxi and takeoff noise.
Actually, right now, since the SST has very much larger engines than do the subsonic airplanes, it will make more noise on the airport. But we have a very intensive noise research program to build a sound suppressor to reduce this noise to acceptable values.
If federal funding isn't forthcoming, can this airplane be built by private enterprise?
If there is no government subsidy, it's very difficult to see how the program can proceed in the United States.
Oh, I think the expenditure is absurd. When the plane is financially feasible, the industry would produce it by itself. With a inflationary economy that is going to be very difficult for us to bring under control, with the other social needs that we have, I think that's a foolish expenditure of government funds.
I think that we have almost ignored the sonic boom. Originally, the promoters of the SST just wished that the problem would go away. And now, apparently, we're saying, this is progress, the people just simply have to live with it. If we would realistically look at the sonic boom, what we should do is to give to physicists and people who may be able to find a solution, give them research money so that they can really approach the problem of the boom to see if, in fact, it can be solved. Then build an aircraft, not the other way around.
More critics of the plane will be heard a month from now when the Senate Appropriations Committee begins its hearings on the Nixon request for money to proceed with the SST. Terry Drinkwater, CBS News, Seattle.
North Korea is claiming that it sank what it called a U.S. imperialist spy ship that intruded into communist waters during the day. But the U.S. Navy denied that it had any ships operating in that Yellow Sea area. Earlier in the day, North Korea had said its gunboats had captured a South Korean Navy boat, and South Korea confirmed the seizure of one of its vessels with 20 crewmen aboard. In Cambodia, quite a battle has developed for control of a fishing village only 10 miles from the capital of Phnom Penh. Enemy troops have twice captured and lost the hamlet to Cambodian forces backed by fighter bombers. However, a senior Cambodian officer described the communist drive as the most serious threat to Phnom Penh since hostilities broke out in March. The Saigon government put on a news conference today for a Vietnamese described as a Viet Cong lieutenant colonel who defected last month. He said the Allied drive against enemy supply bases in Cambodia forced the communists to call off a general offensive planned for May. He also said that the communist command knew about all Allied military operations from 1 to 4 days before they began, including the thrust into Cambodia, improved monitoring devices, and poor Allied security. And the defector claimed that communist Chinese advisors helped plan the big enemy Tet Offensive in 1967. CBS News representatives in Cambodia have recovered the body and confirmed the death of correspondent George Sievertson in an apparent Viet Cong ambush last Sunday. Of two other Americans caught in the same incident, CBS News reporter-producer Gerald Miller is still listed as missing, and NBC News correspondent Wells Hangen is believed captured.
Only $100,000 in cash the first time around. So there was great concern that he might really go off the deep end if he were allowed to take off again.
Mr. Saunders, where do we stand now in being more able to minimize this kind of thing?
I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that question.
If hijackers can't be stopped, they can be watched. Jet fighter planes trailed the hijacked airliner northward from Dulles Airport and back, a standard tracking operation on planes that may be headed for Cuba. TWA says its counteragents in Phoenix had been trained to spot hijacker personality traits, but apparently Barkley looked more like just a former bread truck driver. In Phoenix, Barkley's wife was interviewed by KOOL-TV and said her husband was angry over a disputed income tax claim of $471.
He's in America. He believes in what she stood for. He didn't go for none of this offbeat stuff. He was a true-blooded American, a man that believed in God. We're church-going people. We believe in God. I don't know. I don't believe he intends to hurt nobody. I know he didn't. He's not that kind of a man.
Why do you think he did what he did?
To draw attention, because he has gone to every official in the whole United States that can be thought of. He's gone to state, federal, labor, anything from even, I think, during Johnson's administration. He had contact with President Johnson to help him in these matters. No one, not one person, was considered enough or cared enough to step in and help.
President Nixon today named Henry Cabot Lodge to be his personal envoy to the Vatican, the first since World War II. Lodge, who will serve without pay, will not have diplomatic status, but the appointment indicated the president's desire to strengthen contacts with the Pope as much as possible without naming an ambassador to the Vatican, a politically sensitive matter.
The United Nations official in Peru raised the estimate of dead from Sunday's earthquake to 50,000 a day. And a Peruvian government's called Concerned Officers Movement have lost their jobs as top-level intelligence briefers. Stephen Rowan learned that Admiral Thomas Moore's staff ordered them removed shortly after their appearance on a CBS Morning News report yesterday. The two, Lieutenants Junior Grade Douglas Kerr and James Payura, had been part of a staff which briefed Moore and other top officers every morning. The spokesman told Rowan that their reassignment is, quote, a purely precautionary move, not punitive. A federal jury has convicted 10 war protesters of raiding Chicago Selective Service offices and burning draft records a year ago. Found guilty on four counts, each defendant faces a maximum sentence of 23 years in prison and $32,000 fine. Mississippi's Governor John Bel Williams, in a statewide television broadcast last night, reported on the state's investigation of the shooting of two Negroes by police at Jackson State College. And here is part of what he had to say.
At about 5 minutes after 12, the first gunfire openly directed at the officers came from the third floor window in the stairwell of the women's dormitory. The glass in this window had already been broken out before the officers arrived, and the curtains had been tied up in the middle. A muzzle blast from that window was observed by officers and a local newsman, and the spotlight on the police vehicle was immediately focused on the third floor window at the report of the shot. A man holding a gun was seen in the broken window at that time. At this time, one to three shots from gunfire came from behind the officers on the south side of Lynch Street. A muzzle blast was seen on the outside platform of the dormitory on the south side of Lynch Street. Almost simultaneously with these shots, a patrol officer was struck and knocked down by a brickbat and stunned, and other officers were hit by various missiles. It was not until this happened that the officers felt compelled, in the interest of self-preservation, to return the fire. The law enforcement officers who were assigned to duty at Jackson State College on that evening did not want to hurt anyone or anything.